The scripture lesson is taken from the prophet Isaiah, chapter 52, verse 7 through 10. And this is what it says. How beautiful upon the mountains are the feet of the one who brings good tidings, who publishes peace and brings tidings of good, who publishes salvation, and who says to Zion, your God reigns. Hark, you watchers, lift up their voices. Together they sing for joy, for their eyes see the return of the Lord to Zion. Break forth together into singing, you wastelands of Jerusalem, for the Lord has comforted his people. He has redeemed Jerusalem. The Lord has borne his holy arm before the eyes of all the nations, and all the ends of the earth shall see the salvation of our God. May God bless the reading and hearing of these words. Minutes after the letter came from Arlene, Jacob set out walking for Washington. He wondered how long it would take him to get there. Before the truck died, he could make it in an hour, but he never tried to walk it. At 60, he knew that he didn't have the endurance he had, but he was still a strong man. Perhaps he could get there by morning if he kept a steady pace, or if he could at least reach a place where there was a bus, he could ride as far as his bills in his pocket could take him. Arlene needed him, so he would go to her if he had to walk every step of the way. Arlene, his baby granddaughter, whom it seemed as if he had only just stopped bouncing her on his knee, was going to have a baby herself. She was alone and scared and in a city and wanted her granddaddy. So he had put on his dead wife's overcoat and then his own and started out. The two coats protected him from the wet snow, but his wife's was too small and cut into his arms. I'm coming, Arlene, baby, he said to the country road. I'm going to be with you for Christmas. How wonderful it would be, thought Jacob, if someone stopped and offered him a ride. Occasionally a car would pass, even on this almost deserted stretch. Once he almost raised his arms to try and wave one down, but thought better of it. Who would give a ride to a black man on a lonely road? He could hope in the Lord, but he'd better rely on his own two feet. No rest, as the good book said, for the weary.
In Washington, Julia Thompson was humming as she worked. Why was she so happy? Because she had two beautiful children and a loving husband, because Walter, her husband, would be singing at the Christmas Eve service, and she always felt so proud and thrilled by his voice, because it was nearly Christmas. Yes, of course, all those things, but hallelujah! It was the first Christmas since she'd known Walter that she hadn't had to deal with his Aunt Patty. Aunt Patty was Walter's only living relative. Some respect was due her for his sake, but nothing ever went right with Aunt Patty. The best years were the ones where she had simply grumbled her way through the celebration, taking the edge off of everyone else's enjoyment. But the last 3 years, she'd managed to orchestrate a series of disasters. Though how you could blame an old lady for falling down on the church walk just before Christmas Eve service and having to be rushed to the hospital with a broken hip, no one could say. Perhaps Aunt Patty should have known enough not to give a two-year-old teddy bear with button eyes, which he could and would immediately pull off and swallow. But she had not known, and it had meant that they had spent Christmas Day with Kevin in the emergency room. Last year, despite Julia's apprehension, everything had gone well until they, with great excitement, told her the news that they were expecting another child. Aunt Patty, who had never before revealed a social conscience, suddenly burst into a lament for all the starving people in the world. Here they were, gorging themselves and daring to be happy while at the same time producing still another baby to crowd out the hungry millions. But this year, despite Walter's urgings, Aunt Patty had decided not to make the 30-mile trip into the city. The weather was uncertain and her bursitis had been acting up. Julia cleaned the house and shopped and baked with an energy she hadn't possessed since before Jenny was born. She even had the strength left over to take the children on long walks and read aloud to Kevin. It was going to be the best Christmas ever. Julia put the baby down for a nap and then took Kevin up to her own bed and began reading to him. Ordinarily, Kevin loved being read to, but today he squirmed and wriggled straight through the night before Christmas. "My, you're fidgety," she said. "Little boys are supposed to be fidgety," he said with dignity. She hugged him close. "Now, this is the story from the Bible about when Jesus was born. Try to listen, all right?" "All right." She read in the story of Mary and Joseph coming down from Nazareth to Bethlehem, stopping to explain about the taxes, the crowded inn, the manger, going on to the shepherds in the field. And lo, the angel of the Lord came upon them, and the glory of the Lord, well, that's a great light, Kevin, shone round about them, and they were sore afraid. And the angel said unto them, "Fear not." "Why were they afraid, Mommy?" "I don't know. I guess the light and the strangers, they'd never seen a real angel before." He seemed satisfied. She read on, and since he was beginning to nod, she finished the whole chapter in a quiet voice until he was sound asleep. Julia propped the pillows around him and went into the kitchen to clean up lunch and get ready for the evening. It was then that she discovered that she had no tangerines. Perhaps she was being silly. Kevin was only 4 and Jenny scarcely 5 months, but a Christmas stocking without a tangerine in the toe just didn't seem right. She got Becky, the teenager from next door, to babysit long enough for her to drive to the grocery store, pick up a few. She was home in 20 minutes. "Everything quiet?" she asked the sitter. "Sure, fine. Your aunt called." Julia's heart sank. "She said to tell you that she'd changed her mind, and would Mr. Thompson please come pick her up?" Julia should have asked Becky to stay with the children and gone straight there to get Aunt Patty, but she didn't. She paid Becky $1 and sent her home before she tried to figure out what to do. Could she pretend that she never got the message? No, she dialed Walter's office. And looking at her watch as she did so, it was now 3:30. If he could leave Washington right away, he'd drive 30 miles to Bethel, pick up Aunt Patty, and get back in time for his rehearsal. But when his secretary finally answered, it was to say that there'd been an accident in the plant in Virginia and that Walter had gone to see about it. If he called in, she'd tell him to call home. That settled it. It was too late. There was no way to get Aunt Patty today unless, reluctantly, she dialed the neighbors. No, Becky had already gone off with friends. She tried, Julia told herself. She really had. No one would expect her to put 2 sleeping children in the car and drive halfway across Maryland in bad weather. The phone rang. Julia? It was, of course, Aunt Patty. I want you just to forget my message. You mustn't bother Walter about me at such a busy time. It looks like snow anyhow, and it would be ridiculous to come all the way out here. Kevin came padding down the hall in his stocking feet. "Who's that, Mommy?" he asked, still half asleep. "Aunt Patty," Julia said. "Aunt Patty?" His face lit up. "She's coming for Christmas." "Now I don't want you to feel bad," Aunt Patty was saying. "Just forget all about me and have a wonderful..." "Aunt Patty," Julia broke in wearily, "we'll be right there as soon as we can." There was a silence on the other end of the line. "Well, I think it's ridiculous to try and make it out here in this weather, but, well, all right, if you insist." Julia woke the baby and bundled both children into the car. It was already getting dark and snowing lightly, but she couldn't honestly say that the roads were dangerous. Even driving slowly, she should have plenty of time to get out to Aunt Patty's house in the country and back in time for the service. Of course, she hadn't counted on the crowded interstate on Christmas Eve afternoon. They alternately crawled and sat, motors idling, horns honking. On the back seat, Jenny slept while Kevin chatted away. He was so excited about getting his Aunt Patty that he sang songs about it, substituting Aunt Patty for Santa Claus. "I ought to deserve some credit," Julia thought, "that in spite of everything, I've never turned Kevin against her." It was nearly 5 before they were off the main highway and moving at a decent rate of speed. If the visibility had been really poor or the road icy, Julia would have turned around for home even then. But there was no way she could escape this journey without disappointing her little boy and making herself feel like Scrooge incarnate. They were dangerously low on gas, but there was a station just this side of Aunt Patty's house where she could fill up. So she pushed on, and when they got there, though, the station was closed for the holiday. So she drove straight to Aunt Patty's house. "Just wait with Jenny, Kevin. I'll run in and get Aunt Patty, and we'll be right back." She dashed from the driveway to the back door and banged. It was bitter cold, though, and the snow was slackening, however. She tried the door. It fell open. "Aunt Patty," she called into the hallway. One of Aunt Patty's cats came bouncing down the steps, meowing menacingly. "Aunt Patty?" She was seized with a sudden panic that the old woman might be lying somewhere in the house. Then her eyes fell on a note on the kitchen table. "Walter, I've gone to run up to Gertrude's for a minute. You can pick me up there or wait for me here. I won't be gone long, love." Walter, were he here, might know who Gertrude was, but Julia had no notion. She wouldn't even know how to look her up in the phone book. She went back to the car. "Where's Aunt Patty?" asked Kevin. Where indeed was Aunt Patty? "She went to see a friend and is coming back soon. We'll go put some gas in the car, and by the time we get back, she'll probably be here." "Why did she go away? Didn't she know we were coming?" Julia started the engine and began backing down the drive. She was not going to ruin Christmas by losing her temper. "Why, Mommy?" "I don't know, Kevin. She didn't tell me." "Did you see her?" "No, she left a note, addressed to Walter, naturally." "What did the note say?" "She just said that she was going out for a few minutes and would be right back." "Why, Kevin?" "Why did you yell at me, Mommy?" "Please, Kevin, I've got to watch the road." Where in the world was the nearest gas station? One that would still be open at 5:30 on Christmas Eve? There was a housing development with a shopping center somewhere about. She had driven there once with Walter. If only she could remember. Aunt Patty's road was a narrow two-lane country road with very few houses. The windshield wipers pushed the snow aside, and she hunched forward, peering out into the path of headlights, not daring to glance at the gas gauge. In the darkness, nothing looked familiar. "Why are you stopping the car, Mommy?" Julia put her head down on the wheel. She was not going to panic. She had 2 children to look after. She had to think clearly. The baby woke up and started to scream. "The baby woke up, Mommy!" "I know, sweetheart. Why did you stop the car?" "Now don't get upset, Kevin. We've just run out of gas. Everything will be all right. Just don't get upset." "I'm not upset. The baby's upset. I'm fidgety." "Well, you can get out of your car seat for a while." She reached back and undid his seatbelt, and he clambered happily into the front seat. "Oh, tuna fish," he cursed in 4-year-old style. "It stopped snowing." Julia took Jenny out of the car bed, one thing at a time. First, the baby must be fed. So as she nursed the baby, she began to sing to entertain Kevin, who was jealous that his sister could have her supper when he could not. They were singing about glories streaming from heaven afar when Kevin spotted the light ahead. "Look, Mommy!"
Jacob had first seen the headlights come quickly over the rise far down the road and then as quickly disappeared. He kept walking, swinging his huge flashlight as he went, expecting them to reappear at any moment. Not that it mattered. The car was heading in the wrong way for him anyhow. Even if by some miracle it was someone who would consider giving him a ride, at least it had stopped snowing. Just then, the beam of his flashlight caught the car sitting in the darkness. There were people inside. He hesitated a moment. What if it were a trick? For himself, he didn't mind dying. Lord knows he was ready to go. But Arlene needed him now. He had to get to Washington. Yet here, perhaps, was somebody else in need. He started across the road, heading for the driver's side of the car.
"Look, Mommy," Kevin said again. "Glory streams heavens afar." A strong, bright light moved over the rise and down the hill towards them. Julia stopped singing and watched it come. Finally, behind the light, she could make out the tall, bulging shadow of a man. She checked quickly to make sure all the doors were locked. She took the baby off her breast and straightened her clothes with a shaking hand. The light was coming straight for her window. Her eyes blinked shut because of the brightness, and when she opened them, a huge black face, which seemed to fill the side window of the small car, was there within inches of her cheek, and she pulled back, and the man tapped on the window with a warm brown glove that showed the tips of his fingers and said something through the glass, and Julia squeezed the baby tighter and stared straight ahead, and Kevin leaned across her and banged on the glass. "Hi," he said.
"Hi yourself."
Out of the corner of her eye, Julia could see the black face smiling broadly. The chin was covered with silver bristles, and several teeth were missing. She tried to grab at Kevin to shush him.
"Need some help?" This time the man was shouting as though to make sure she could hear him plainly through the window, but she refused to turn her head.
"Mommy, why don't you answer the nice man?" "Shh, Kevin, we don't know what he wants. He wants to know if we need some help."
The man leaned close to the glass and shouted again. "Don't be afraid, little lady."
"You hear that, Mommy?" "Kevin, please." "But, Mommy, don't be afraid. That's what the angels say." "Kevin, no." But before she could catch him, Kevin had slid across the seat, pulled up the button, opened the door, jumped out of the car, and the man immediately started around to meet him. "Don't touch my child!" Julia screamed, twisting awkwardly from under the wheel and still clutching the baby.
"You don't want him running out into the road, do you, lady?"
No, thank you. She took Kevin's hand.
"I saw your car and figured you were in trouble."
There was no way to ignore him now. But she had to be careful. He was over 6 feet tall and obviously strong. The police pamphlet directions flashed across her brain. Be sure to look carefully at your assailant so that you can give an accurate description to the police later. If there was a ladder, oh, God, don't let him hurt me. Please don't let him hurt the children. "We ran out of gas," Kevin said.
Why was she so afraid of him? He, Jacob, who had never willfully hurt the least of one of God's creatures, couldn't she tell by looking at him that he only wanted to help? Even the child could see that. He stretched out his hand to put it on the boy's head, but seeing the look on the woman's eyes, he brought it back. "Your old car got an empty belly, huh?"
"Me too," Kevin said. "I haven't had my supper."
"Well, we got to do something about that. I passed a gas station A while back, Jacob said to the woman, "You don't have a can, do you?" She shook her head. She seemed to be shivering. "You better get back in the car and try to stay warm." He turned and started back up the hill, sighing as he retraced the descent of a few minutes ago. It seemed to have grown steeper, but at least, praise the Lord, the snow has stopped and the sky was clearing.
Wait, you'll need some money.
"I got some," Jacob said. He didn't want to waste time and energy going back down the hill.
Suppose he never came back. Would they grow cold and sleepy and freeze out here in the middle of nowhere on Christmas Eve? Well, Aunt Patty, you certainly will have beaten your own record this year. Even Christmas morning in the emergency room will pale in comparison. And then suppose he did come back. What did he want? He could have just taken her purse and run if money was what he wanted. But of course it was clear he was it wasn't clear what he was after. So she could get away faster, but she tried not to think about that. "I think we should sing some more songs," Kevin said. "I might forget about my tummy." Julia was glad for the diversion. They sang through every carol she knew, even La La La-ing through the unfamiliar verses. And then they sang all the songs on Kevin's favorite records, and then another round of Christmas carols, until at long last they saw the light coming over the hill. "Here comes the glory light," said Kevin. This time, when the man came to her window, she rolled it down.
"Would you hold the flashlight for me while I pour the gas in?" he asked. Trembling, she laid Jenny down in the car, in the car bed, and went around to the tank. He handed her his big torch, which she tried to hold steady as he poured.
"Well, thank you, Julia said, when he had finished, keeping her voice cool. "Let me pay you something for all your trouble."
Jacob looked at her. She was going to give him some money and drive off. He had given her nearly an hour of his time and far more of his energy than she could spare. There was no way she could pay him for that. But she had already gone to the front seat and gotten her purse. The little boy scampered around her every step. "That's all right," he said. "Forget it."
She stuck a few bills out at him. But I owe you for the gas."
I do need to return the can. If you could give me a ride down the road and back." She nodded. He could tell by her eyes that she didn't want him in the car. But Lord, she owed him for that. He decided to ignore her eyes. "Well, old man," he said to the child, "let's see if we can get this old buggy going." He took the boy around and put him in the seat, letting the child tell him how to buckle the seat belt. And then he climbed into the front seat. The woman put her purse down between them and buckled herself in. Jacob looked down at the purse and then realized he had caught him looking at her. He quickly shifted his gaze. "Just down the road, a couple of miles or so," he said.
Within 10 minutes, they were at the lighted station. She gave the can back to the attendant and asked him to fill the tank. She saw his eyes question the presence of the man on the seat beside her. Should she try to signal for help? It seemed too foolish. The man had done nothing except try to help her, so far. She, at least, owed him a ride home on this freezing night. "We come to get Aunt Patty to take her home for Christmas." "Oh, Kevin."
"Is that a fact? Where's your home, old man?"
"Don't answer him, Kevin." But of course Kevin, who had memorized his full address at nursery school, recited it in a proud sing-song. 1306 Essex Street, Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20016.
"My, you're a smart boy."
"I know," said Kevin.
"I could get a ride all the way to Washington tonight," Jacob said to himself. "All I have to do is ask." But he couldn't make himself say the words. If the woman had seemed in the least bit friendly, the least bit trusting, he would have asked her. But how could he ask a favor of a person who thought he was going to grab her purse and hurt her kids? He had started the car and was pulling out of the station.
Where shall I let you off?
It was his chance to tell her. She owed him something, didn't she? And Arlene was waiting, not even knowing if he had gotten her letter. Just down the road, he mumbled, just anywhere.
They drove past the place where they had met, but he gave no sign of wanting to be let out, so Julia drove on. She couldn't just stop in the middle of nowhere and order him out. What should she do? They went on until she could see Aunt Patty's house ablaze with light. Aunt Patty was home. Thank God for small blessings. Here's where Aunt Patty lives, Kevin told the stranger.
Is that a fact?
The problem of how to get Aunt Patty without leaving the children alone in the car with the man solved itself. Aunt Patty came rushing out of the house, coat and suitcase flying. She had obviously been watching for the car, and when she saw Julia at the wheel, she was furious. Where have you been? She demanded. You're going to make me miss the music.
Julia opened her mouth to defend herself, but at the same moment, her passenger got out of the car. He stood there tall and straight against the starry winter sky.
Mercy! Aunt Patty screamed. What in the world? He's our angel, Aunt Patty, our Christmas angel. Don't be ridiculous, Kevin. Ridiculous indeed. All Julia's fears evaporated in a puff of anger. How dare Aunt Patty call it ridiculous? The man had been an angel. She leaned across the seat and called out, "Would you mind squeezing in back with the children?" Even in the darkness, she thought she could see him smile. "Get in, Aunt Patty," she commanded, "or you'll make us miss the music." A little further down the road, she turned to him. "How far can I take you?"
"I need to go all the way to Washington," he said.
"Oh, goody," cried Kevin. "Then you can go to church with us. We never had a real angel in church before."
He patted the boy's knees. "Can't make it this time, old man," he said. "I got to go to this lonesome little girl. Cheer her up for Christmas."
"Angels are really busy, aren't they?"
"We keep busy, but it's mighty pleasant work."
Aunt Patty may have said something that sounded like ridiculous, but Julia joyfully chose to ignore it. This was going to be a perfect Christmas.